Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Friday, March 15th, 2024. We're the only podcast that's separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Melissa Topshire with today's headlines. Chuck Schumer calls for elections in Israel.
The UK unveils a new definition of extremism.
The EU agrees to provide 5 billion euros in military aid to Ukraine.
Geert Wilders abandons his bid for Dutch prime minister.
The UK bans foreign state ownership of newspapers.
The US reportedly held indirect talks with Iran.
Don Lemon's X show is canceled after an alleged row with Elon Musk.
A court rules that Japan's ban on same-sex marriage is, quote, unconstitutional.
A study claims vaccines cut the risk of COVID-related heart failure and blood clots.
And SpaceX's Starship achieves its most successful test flight yet.
In our first story today, Chuck Schumer calls for a new election in Israel. Here are the facts as agreed upon by ABC News, NBC, CNN, NPR Online News, NBC New York, and the Associated Press. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, called for a new election in Israel during an impassioned address on the Senate floor, breaking his silence on the Israel-Gaza conflict and Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. While members of his party have vocally criticized Israel and its government for its response to Hamas's attack on October 7th, Schumer has remained quiet on the issue. In his formal remarks, he said that Netanyahu has lost his way and no longer fits the needs of Israel. Schumer, who noted that he's the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in the U.S., reaffirmed his lifelong support for Israel while claiming that the world has changed radically since October 7th and suggesting that Israel change course. Israel has come under intense scrutiny for the Gaza death toll, and Schumer claims that the country has received too much blame for the humanitarian crisis. However, he said that Israel must maintain global support and avoid becoming a pariah. Schumer said the Israeli leader is allowing his political survival to take precedence over the country's interests. Schumer has called for a two-state solution and adds that Hamas and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas are also threats to peace. Congressional Republicans were quick to criticize his remarks, saying that Democrats have an anti-Israel bias and should respect the Middle Eastern nation's democracy.
Thank you, Melissa, for laying out the facts on our first story today. I'm going to start the first round of narrative spins with a Democratic narrative, and it's provided by New Republic. A Jewish American and proud Zionist himself, Schumer is the furthest thing from an anti-Israel Democrat. But he recognizes that the Netanyahu government has done far more harm than good. Netanyahu's political insecurity has caused him to completely disregard the will of the people and the best interests of Israel, and he shouldn't be allowed to stay in office without a vote. Everyone wants peace, and Netanyahu is an obstacle to achieving this.
And here's a Republican narrative from the National Review. Schumer has finally caved to the radical left wing of his party. While using his Jewish roots to legitimize his claim, he has tactically blamed Israel for Hamas's brutal attack on October 7 and undermined Israel's right to defend itself from terrorists. Schumer's claims imply that a new government would end the war against Hamas, but that's unlikely. Israeli security remains threatened, and a ceasefire cannot happen until Hamas is eliminated. Schumer and the Democrats cannot subvert Israeli democracy.
And our friends at the Metaculous Prediction Community are going to throw their hats in the ring. They've got a nerd narrative on our first story today. They think that there's a 44% chance that Benjamin Netanyahu will remain prime minister of Israel through 2024. The UK unveils a new definition of extremism. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Japan Today, Reuters, Independent, and Sky News. The UK government introduced its new definition of extremism on Thursday, changing it to, quote, the promotion of advancement of an ideology based on violence, hatred, or intolerance, if used for particular goals. Such goals include attempts to, quote, negate or destroy the rights and freedoms of others, undermine, overturn, or replace the UK's parliamentary democracy and democratic rights, or intentionally create a permissive environment for others to achieve the first two provisions. While 80 groups are already deemed extremist by the UK, the government said it will release a new list after conducting a so-called robust assessment in the coming weeks. Those on the list won't face criminal penalties but will be barred from government funding or engagement. Community Secretary Michael Gove released a short list of groups already identified, including the British National Socialist Movement, Patriotic Alternative, CAGE, Muslim Engagement and Development, and the Muslim Association of Britain. The government said the definition is, quote, narrower and more precise than the previous one, which, since 2011, labeled extremism as, quote, vocal or active opposition to fundamental British values, including democracy, the rule of law, individual liberty, and mutual respect and tolerance. Although Gove said the new definition is, quote, not intended to prevent people from demonstrating per se, critics say it could potentially impact free speech and misidentify certain people or groups.
Thank you, Adam, and we'll start this round of spins with a right narrative from The Spectator. Finally, the government has acknowledged that accepting intolerance leads to an intolerant society. This measure will stop the government from engaging with or providing money to groups that fuel the flames of violence, whether they're neo-Nazis, radical Islamists, or any intolerant group. Anyone who's not a member of these groups needn't worry about the government infringing on their rights.
That's going to be countered with a left narrative by Muslim Council of Britain. Even before this definition was codified into government policy, the ruling Conservative Party had identified leading Muslim rights activists as extreme and divisive. Now the broad brush this definition creates could empower the government to go after peaceful protesters and bar them from accessing the government.
And the nerds at Metaculous have a statistical opinion saying there's a 37% chance that the UK will have a Conservative Prime Minister on January 1st, 2030. The EU agrees on a 5 billion euro package for the Ukraine's weapon fund. Here are the facts as agreed upon by RFI, Politico, X, Reuters, and Al Jazeera. After months of negotiations, EU countries on Wednesday agreed in principle on a new 5 billion euro assistance fund for military aid to Ukraine. The agreement, when formally passed, will create a new initiative called the Ukraine Assistance Fund. It will fall under the existing European Peace Facility, or EPF, a mechanism that allows EU countries to be reimbursed for the weapons they provide to Ukraine. "We made it," the EU's top diplomat, Joseph Borrell, said on the X platform, formerly Twitter, shortly after the deal. "The message is clear. We will support Ukraine with whatever it takes to prevail," he added. During negotiations, Germany, the EU's largest provider of Ukraine military aid, wanted 100% of the aid provided to be deducted from contributions made to the EPF. Ultimately, according to two sources who spoke to Politico, they agreed to a figure below 50%. Meanwhile, France had insisted on a bi-European policy that stipulated reimbursements had to be for weapons produced in the EU. However, while EU weapons will be prioritized, exceptions were worked into the agreement to allow for non-EU weapons to be reimbursed if the weapons Ukraine needs cannot be provided in a timely basis. The final agreement is expected to be approved at an EU meeting of foreign affairs ministers that is set to take place next week. According to the EU, the EPF has already allocated roughly 6.1 billion euros in military aid to Ukraine.
Thank you, Melissa. The spins are going to start with the pro-establishment narrative. It's brought to us by Politico. This is much welcome news for Ukraine, which is in much desperate need for the military aid, amid Washington's inability to secure additional funds. It also reaffirms the EU's commitment to Ukraine, demonstrating that it will stand by Ukraine for as long as it takes to prevail.
And here's an establishment critical narrative from Salon. After 2 years of grueling war, it's clear that the U.S. and NATO project of fighting a proxy war against Russia has failed. Instead of continuing this wrong-headed policy of continuing to arm Ukraine and escalate the conflict, Western leaders need to reverse the course and instead push for peace.
And the nerds think that there's a 7% chance that there will be a bilateral ceasefire or peace agreement in the Russo-Ukraine conflict in 2024. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. News out of the Netherlands, where Geert Wilders has abandoned his prime minister bid. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Guardian, Politico, X, and BBC News. Nearly 4 months after an election in which his party won the most seats, Dutch right-wing politician Geert Wilders said on Wednesday he was ready to drop his ambitions of becoming the country's next prime minister. Despite his Party for Freedom, the PPV, securing 37 out of 150 seats in November's elections, far more than predicted, it fell short of a majority, requiring Wilders to enter into a coalition of other parties to form a government, a feat he has so far failed to achieve. Wilders held coalition talks with the People's Party for Freedom and Democracy, the center-right New Social Contract, and the Dutch Farmers Party. However, the other parties said that the talks could only continue if Wilders does not become prime minister. Commenting on his decision, Wilders said on X, formerly Twitter, that he was unable to secure the support of all parties in the coalition, adding that he was seeking a, quote, right-wing cabinet to implement a policy of less asylum and immigration. The leaders of the other three parties declared that a coalition would only be considered if none of the four party leaders took on a role in the government. According to reports, the parties are open to forming a minority government with an, quote, extra-parliamentary cabinet. The last time that the party securing the most votes in the Dutch parliamentary elections did not appoint the prime minister was in 1982.
Thank you, Adam. We'll start with a narrative A from ITV News. Wilders is an incredibly controversial figure who is known for inflammatory, anti-Islamic, and anti-immigration rhetoric. In a country that's long prided itself on tolerance, it's no surprise that the other parties did not want him to hold the top job.
Spin's going to continue with a narrative B brought to us by Dutch News. The fact that the person with the most votes in the general election will not become prime minister is not only unfair, it's undemocratic. The Netherlands need to overhaul its laws so that this situation cannot happen again.
And there's a nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's a 1% chance that any of Belgium, France, Italy, Luxembourg, Netherlands, and or Germany will leave the EU before 2027. In our next story, the UK considers barring foreign newspaper ownership. And here are the facts as agreed upon by the Associated Press, The Guardian, Sky News, BBC, France 24, and Voice of America. A UAE-led consortium is expected to shortly attempt to buy the British newspapers, The Daily Telegraph and The Spectator. In response, the UK government said on Wednesday that it would support a law banning newspaper and magazine ownership from foreign entities. Such legislation is expected to derail the planned £600 million sale of The Telegraph and The Spectator to Redbird IMI, a collaboration led by Sheikh Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the vice president of UAE and a privately owned U.S. investment corporation. The Digital Markets Act is currently in its third reading in Parliament. The legislation would give the Parliament veto power over foreign governments assuming control of British media companies. In response to the move, the consortium's spokesperson emphasized its unwavering dedication to investing in international media. Redbird IMI said it would assess the situation before continuing to invest in the UK's media environment. Parkinson stated that the law would be debated in Parliament next week and could come into force immediately with royal approval. The minister said the ban would only be pertinent to print media, not broadcasters. The government would submit any relevant media merger to the Competition and Markets Authority. Should that entity conclude that a merger would lead to foreign influence or control over a newspaper, the government would be legally obliged to stop the move.
Thank you, Melissa. We're going to start the spin with a pro-establishment narrative, and it is provided by The Telegraph. An autocrat state controlling two influential newspapers is utterly untenable on principle. In a democracy, newspaper editorial independence must be guaranteed. Worse, if the purchase goes through, the newspaper's new UAE owners may attempt to influence public opinion on UK foreign policy, particularly its complicated relations with China. This merger is inappropriate because it poses a significant security threat. The government must put a stop to it.
Arab News brings us an establishment critical narrative. Redbird IMI's offer to acquire The Telegraph and The Spectator demonstrates a commitment to preserving the publication's heritage while also protecting their distinct editorial focus and fearless journalism. Editorial independence and integrity must endure in a society where post-truth and alternative facts are rampant. The consortium demonstrates significant financial backing and can offer unrivaled investments to the newspaper, ensuring the newspaper's survival and jobs.
In a report released on Wednesday, U.S. and Iran held secret talks over Red Sea attacks. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Times of Israel, Ynet News, CNN, Al Arabiya, and World ECR. According to a Wednesday report citing unnamed American and Iranian officials in the Financial Times, the U.S. has held secret talks with Iran urging Tehran to rein in Houthi attacks on commercial vessels in the Red Sea. The delegations at the Oman-brokered talks in January were reportedly led by the Biden administration's Middle East advisor Brett McGurk, U.S. Special Envoy to Iran Abram Paley, and Ali Bagheri Khani, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister and chief negotiator at the nuclear talks. The indirect talks, the first reported U.S.-Iran engagement since the two countries exchanged prisoners in September, reportedly addressed a range of issues, in addition to the Houthi attacks on U.S. ships in the Red Sea, including Iran's nuclear program. The U.S. State Department declined to comment on the Oman talks, saying all talks with Tehran since October 7th centered on the full range of threats the U.S. says imminent from Iran, and the need for Iran to cease its across-the-board escalation. During the reported engagement, the U.S. and Iran relied on Omani officials to transmit messages. Follow-up talks slated for February did not proceed because McGurk redirected his efforts to securing a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel. In a further development, Washington this week announced sanctions against four suspected Iran-based members or financiers of the Bahraini Al-Ashtar Brigades, which were designated a terrorist organization by the U.S. in 2018.
We'll start this round of spins with a pro-Iran narrative from Global Village Space. Continued attacks by the Houthis confirm what Tehran has been saying all along. The Shiite Yemeni group may be politically linked to Iran, but it's acting independently. Iran, however, is willing to support the U.S. in its attempt to find a diplomatic solution to instability in the region, if it has finally accepted that it can't win militarily in this case.
That's going to be countered with the anti-Iran narrative provided by Middle East Eye. The failure of these talks proves Tehran is deliberately seeking escalation, believing it will bolster its regional clout. The Houthis rely on Iran politically and militarily and are just one of the proxies Tehran is using to destabilize the region. The U.S. is willing to use diplomatic channels in addition to military deterrence if Iran is open to more talks.
And here's another nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's an 11% chance that the U.S. and Iran will be primary actors on opposite sides of a war before January 1st, 2025. Elon Musk nixes Don Lemon's X talk show after an interview. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNBC, The Guardian, The Associated Press, The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, and Politico. Former CNN anchor Don Lemon has said that ex, formerly Twitter, owner Elon Musk canceled his new talk show's March 18th premiere on the microblogging platform hours after recording an interview with him. Lemon posted on X on Wednesday that Musk went back on his word and texted him, "Contract terminated." However, the billionaire said the journalist's approach was basically just CNN but on social media, which doesn't work. X said that though it had canceled the commercial deal with Lemon, he could publish his show without censorship. However, Lemon, who alleged Musk was mad at him, reportedly plans to air the interview on YouTube and as a podcast on Monday. While Lemon said he had a good conversation with Musk during the tense interview, he stated that the Tesla CEO felt differently. When the Lemon X deal was announced in January, Lemon had called X the biggest space for free speech. X already streams former Fox News anchor Tucker Carlson's show. Lemon lost his CNN job last April following criticism surrounding his on-air comments and the publication of a Variety magazine report on his alleged long-running misogynistic behavior.
Melissa, thank you for the facts in that story. I'm interested to see where the spins take us. Let's start off with a narrative A, and it's provided by Mint. Elon Musk was unfortunately just being himself in canceling the Don Lemon show at the last moment. He was reportedly annoyed at being asked about his alleged anti-Semitism and the reported use of ketamine. Clearly, some topics cut too close to the free speech champion's skin. For those like Musk, free speech can apparently be sacrificed if it doesn't end up affirming your own fragile ego.
And Fox News brings us a narrative B. Irrespective of how big the journalist is, not everyone can successfully transition from conventional television media to producing online content. Don Lemon thought he could continue doing on X what he was best known for doing at CNN. Deflecting the blame on Elon Musk amid such failure is juvenile.
The nerds are going to chime in. They think that there's a 66% chance that Elon Musk will face U.S. federal criminal charges or an SEC civil complaint before 2026. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. A Japan court rules a ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Reuters, Kyoto News, The Japan Times, CBS, and Al Jazeera. A Japanese high court ruled that the country's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional on Thursday, in a move advocacy groups say will likely pressure the government to increase protections for LGBTQ people. The court's ruling cited the country's constitution, which discusses the right to equality, and states that marriage shall only be on the mutual consent of both sexes. The court said that this could be taken to mean marriage between individuals of the same sexes should be guaranteed. The ruling is the first time a high court has found Japan's ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional. A similar ruling was made earlier in the day that said due to a lack of protection for same-sex couples, a ban on same-sex marriage is in a state of unconstitutionality. Five other courts have deemed Japan's ban unconstitutional or nearly unconstitutional, but none but this ruling has deemed the country's existing marriage law unconstitutional. The High Court does not have the authority to reverse the current marriage law. Acceptance for marriage equality has grown in Japan, but the Liberal Democratic Party, known for its conservative politics around gender equality, opposes it. A 2023 poll by the Pew Research Center found that 68% of the Japanese population supports legalizing same-sex marriage. Japan remains the only member of the group of seven major industrialized countries that has not legalized same-sex marriage and civil unions.
Thank you, Adam. We'll start with a left narrative from Amnesty. This verdict is a long-awaited victory for LGBTQ rights in Japan. This marks a significant step towards the legalization of same-sex marriage in the country and shows that discrimination like the ban on marriage equality is unconstitutional and has no place in the country. The Japanese government must now take proactive steps to legalize marriage equality and ensure the equal rights of its LGBTQ citizens.
I've got the right narrative provided by AP News. Japan is a traditional country that holds significance in conservative family values. Legalizing gay marriage would not just be a legal change, it would significantly alter Japanese society. While LGBTQ people mustn't be discriminated against in Japan, legalizing same-sex marriage requires significant discussion and should not be rushed into.
And here's a nerd narrative from Metaculous saying there's a 50% chance that at least 20% of the world's population will live in countries where same-sex marriage is legal in 2032. A new study claims that vaccinations reduce risk of COVID-related heart complications. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Guardian, News Medical, BMJ Journals, and the Wenatchee World. A study of people in the UK, Spain, and Estonia showed that COVID vaccinations could substantially decrease the risk of severe virus-related heart problems, such as heart failure and blood clots, for up to 1 year. Researchers who published their results in the journal Heart examined the records of more than 20 million people, half of whom were vaccinated, with the goal of studying the association between the vaccine and the risk of post-COVID cardiac and blood clot complications. Subjects were placed into four cohorts, with the first including older people, the second being populated by people more prone to severe infection, the third including those 40 and older, and the fourth featuring people 18 and older. People who received adenovirus-based vaccines by Oxford's AstraZeneca and Janssen, or mRNA jabs by Pfizer and Moderna, had reduced risk of heart failure post-infection by 55% compared to unvaccinated people. Risk of blood clots in veins and arteries was reduced by 78% and 47%. This comes, however, after a study published last week by the Global Vaccine Data Network, the largest global vaccine safety study to date, found COVID vaccines were linked to increases in neurological, blood, and heart-related conditions, such as myocarditis.
Thanks for the facts, Melissa. We're going to start with the pro-establishment narrative provided by Salon. This is just the latest of many studies showing that the benefits of life-saving COVID vaccinations far outweigh any side effects. There's always the risk that some individuals' bodies will have adverse responses, but they're extremely rare and benign compared to the severity of the virus itself.
And here's the establishment critical narrative from InfoWars. These studies are often paid for by the pharmaceutical companies to assuage public concerns about vaccines. Meanwhile, the media refuses to tell the stories of the countless people who suffered heart complications, or worse, after being forced into taking the experimental shots. The jury is still out, and the censorship continues today.
Melissa, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that the U.S. FDA and CDC will recommend at least 7 doses of the mRNA COVID-19 vaccine to at least 15% of the U.S. by December 31st of 2024. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. And our final story today, a SpaceX Starship is lost after a successful mission. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Axios, New York Times, Washington Post, Reuters, and CNN. After launching from Texas Thursday morning, the SpaceX Starship rocket entered outer space before detaching from its booster and conducting a controlled descent back to Earth. While in orbit, it transferred liquid oxygen between two tanks, simulating a refueling. The heat of the air during reentry eventually cut communication between the base and the spacecraft, but not before attached cameras, powered by the company's Starlink internet satellites, broadcast video footage of the flight. While this was the company's most successful orbital flight so far, the Starship's 18,000 heat shield tiles were not enough to keep the rocket in flight through its originally planned splashdown in the Indian Ocean. This follows two previous Starship launches, both of which ended in explosions after liftoff. The company plans to conduct 6 more launches this year, and if they land intact, SpaceX must submit each flight's data to the U.S. government before a rocket can be reused. Another key component to Starship's eventual success will be to reignite the spacecraft's engines during shallow orbit, though the company chose not to do so this time. This is the latest step to SpaceX's and its owner Elon Musk's goal of bringing humans to Mars. In the shorter term, NASA also hopes to use the Starship for its Artemis 3 program, which aims to put astronauts on the moon by September of 2026.
Thanks, Adam, for those final facts, and we'll begin the spins with a narrative A from Business Insider. While the Starship program isn't quite ready to shuttle humans to Mars, this extraordinary and historic display of aerospace engineering shows SpaceX is on its way to achieving its goals. Not only will this rocket ship launch Americans back into space, but it will do so at a much lower cost if both the spaceship and booster can be consistently reused.
Medium is going to continue the spin with a narrative B. While SpaceX, as is the case with many other Musk-owned companies, is accomplishing incredible things, we can't forget that almost all of his startups have been boosted significantly by government funding. Out of all of Musk's business ventures, SpaceX rockets will receive the most taxpayer dollars, So is it worth the cost when this industry likely turns into a for-profit space tourism enterprise? If tax dollars are going to be spent anywhere, maybe the government should go back to subsidizing the more beneficial industry of electric cars.
And the nerds have the final say from Metaculous. And this nerd narrative says there's a 50% chance that SpaceX will launch humans around the moon by July 2027. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Friday, March 15th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
You can find out more about Verity at our website, verity.news, or download our app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Melissa Topshire, inviting you to join us next time on Verity.